Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 25th of May. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
I'm Charles Archer.
And I'm Luke Sartain.
Yeah, we got a new guest. We'll come on to Luke in a minute. But yeah, nearly halfway through the year. Where did that time go? I mean, only a month away from the days going to be getting shorter. That's depressing, isn't it? But you probably missed us last week, but we decided to take a short break into the Welsh mountains. And wasn't it fun? Wasn't it fun, Kev?
It was very, 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 very good weather. The roads were fantastic. And it was quite an experience. It was great.
Yeah, some amazing roads up there, isn't there? It really is. But yeah, what have you been up to this week, Charles?
What have I been up to this week? No, do you know what? I've been spending the week trying to find somebody to replace my patio. And I can't find anyone. So I'm going to do it myself. Starting tomorrow.
There's a builder from Leicester, Fred West.
Oh, that's all right. Then no problem. I'll invite him straight into my home. But no, it's just the idea of doing hours and hours of manual labor. It doesn't look that complex. I'm sure I'll get it wrong. But you come to a point where if you've Googled enough people and contacted enough people, no one gets back to you. It's sunny. They're all at the beach. I understand it. But, you know, had enough. What have you been
doing? And for a patio, how much were you expecting to pay? It's probably about
It wasn't even about the money. I just wanted someone else to do it. But you get... Yeah, a few thousand. I've not.
They send you a few Egyptian builders if you want. They've got loads of time.
Yeah, I don't actually know. I mean, it's the problem with like a lot of trading work is that you don't actually know how much anything is ever meant to cost anymore. So you just kind of get free quotes if you can. What's the historical advice? And then you just pick the one in the middle. Whereas now, just getting anyone to quote is a nightmare in the UK because there aren't any tradies, and the ones that are just apparently they don't work in Exeter. It's a bit sad, but there we go.
Luke, what have you been up to? It's been a while since you've been on, but obviously our guest this week, so we thought we'd bring you in on the intro. It's always good to talk politics, but what have you been up to?
Training an AI to solve the exact thing that Charles is a problem with.
Wonderful. Is it working yet?
yeah. Thankfully so, and also completing our fundraising round, so it's been a busy time. I've not quite seen as much sunlight as I would like to, but... needs must. I've got to say, Charles, I don't think there would be a better segue than going into the episode based on your challenges. So it's good.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's not the worst challenge. It's a first world problem, I'll grant you. But it is a problem that needs to be solved, and we live in the first world. So.
Well, we need robots. We need robots. You'll ring up, your AI will ring you up and say, you want your patio done? Okay, there'll be three humanoid robots around. What time would you like them there? What time would you like them to finish? What time would you... when would you like to pay? And you're done.
I've kind of like... Is the future going to be like Wallace and Gromit, you know? Where, like, you don't even have to get yourself out of bed. The bed just pops up and you fall down. Your clothes get dressed on you. Your toaster makes a toast. You get a face full of porridge. You go out to your car. It drives you to places.
You'll just be able to lay in bed all day with your augmented reality glasses and, live a life that way, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It depends. If you go too far into philosophy, is this world not real? Are we just in an AI-created world of a different universe? Who knows?
Oh, that's getting too deep now. I've got to stop.
The last time I stubbed my toe, it was definitely real. The pain receptors are there.
Yeah. Let's have a look at some of the news stories that have dominated the headlines this week. So obviously the first bit is the new UK-EU agreement announced this week aims to ease post-Brexit tensions with improved trade terms, reducing checks on food products, reopening chilled meat exports, and proposing smoother travel for youth and holidaymakers. It also includes a formal security pact and access to the EU's €150 billion defence fund. However, concerns have been raised over the UK extending EU fishing rights until 2038 and increasing regulatory alignment, prompting critics to question whether the UK has conceded more sovereignty than it has gained economically or diplomatically. So I guess the question on this one is, have we given away more than we've gained?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, if you talk, like, we got a load of fishermen down here in Devon, and people don't understand that, like, what we catch in the UK is fish that we don't eat in the UK. Generally, we send it over to Europe. When's the last time you ate a herring, for example? This is not a fish that you really want to have. So, you know, having allowing the European boats into the UK to, actually fish and for us to be able to export it into the EU, is probably a net benefit, you know, when you actually talk to real fishermen. But I think basically it's a bit of a nothing burger, really, in terms of like a new deal, like a new economic deal. It doesn't really sound like it's, you know, done particularly much different, you know, has it really?
We all want to use the e-gates, though, don't you?
But
If you've got your British passport, you don't want to be,
yeah, but have you noticed
you don't want to have to
that
queue
each
up. We're going
individual
to pay
country gets to
billions for
choose
that.
anyway?
Exactly.
So,
The first thing they're going to say is, no, we're not allowing them Brits to use the e-gates. It's as simple as that.
and that's assuming that the Brits can afford to go on a holiday.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Good
Yeah,
point.
I just.
We got dead end on that one. But no, I mean, what I think you summed it up at the opening there, Charles, that you talked about the amount of money that's been spent. I mean, how much has this UK EU deal cost? I mean, you talked
Oh,
about the Chagos. I mean, how much money's been spent this week?
this week, right, this is something I've been working on. So the EU reset costs are around 12 billion, I would say. You know, if we return the winter fuel allowance and potentially abolishing the two-child cap, that's around 5 billion. The April budget overspend, 4 billion-ish. Chagos is anywhere between 10 and 40 billion, depending on who you believe. Public sector pay rises, we're talking 7 billion, but then it's going to be 10 billion by the time pensions are factored in, and probably closer to 15 after we have the strikes, which are inevitable. And then the gilt yield's up to what, 4.8%? You know, obviously the bond market is kind of screaming at the moment, but we're talking the best part of sort of 50, 60 billion in a week. You know, obviously the fiscally across the Western world, it's just completely unsustainable. And basically the problem is whenever you start spending loads of money, there's four choices. There's you can either increase taxes, and we're already way past the Laffer curve in the UK, so it doesn't work. Or you can increase borrowing, which is just increasing taxes in the future. Or you can cut spending elsewhere, which, you know, the government is, you know, continues to try to do across the world, and it can't quite manage to do it. And yeah, I mean, we're kind of in this circular world now where we continue to spend far more money than we bring in as a country, and it's leading to our economic decline, and no one seems to want to do anything about it. And then when Labour sort of removes the winter fuel allowance, which is £300 a year, but simultaneously keeps a triple lock on pensions, so pensions are better off overall anyway. And then they cave and give that winter fuel allowance back to the wealthiest segment of the population. All that does is send a message to me that no one's ever going to get serious about cutting spending at all. Yeah, that's where we are. It's a
Big
bit
that
pessimistic,
rollback,
but it is what it is.
no, but it is a big
12
rollback.
billion back to the EU. That's £231 million a week. What was written on the side of those buses? 350 million a week could go to the NHS, and we just gave them back another 231 million a week.
Well, I think this is the problem, though, isn't it? Because we had the situation where, you know, if you look at the Brexit vote back in 2016, the correct way to do it would have been, we'll negotiate an exit deal over a couple of years, and then the vote will be, we can keep the status quo, or we can go with this exit deal that's been negotiated. But the problem is, you have 52% of the population voted for a varying variety of different Brexits, and then we've got the one that we've got. But you have politicians implementing it who didn't want to leave the European Union in the first place.
Yeah,
So you get
so they're
all of the
sort of
negatives and none of the potential benefits.
partially rejoining it, let's be honest.
Oh, come on, we're just it's pretty much rejoining it. We're getting closer and closer. I think it's kind of inevitable that we will rejoin in all but name, simply because of the fiscal situation. You're going to have to cleave to each other to do trading routes. And when you've got America being an unreliable trading partner, you know, Europe is right next door to us. There's no real choice.
But
No,
the big financial news of the week is surely how the bond markets are reacting to Trump's tariff tantrum, if you like, because basically now we're seeing the reality. We've also seen gold start to go up. We've seen Bitcoin start to go up as a non-fiat currency. We've seen the dollar start to fall. So we've got a situation where the dollar's falling, the yields are going up, which is like a bit bizarre. And the stock market, everybody's thinking they've ignored the fundamental financial situation by the looks of things.
yeah,
What
I
do you
mean.
think, Luke? Give us your view.
I mean, I touched on this before, but I think it's going to be heading towards this larger global conflict anyway. You know, all of the markets seem to be internalizing as much as they can in preparation for it. The easiest way to get out of debt as a country is to win a war. So I think if history has taught us anything, is that. But you know, maybe I just need more positivity in my life. So what's your
Yes,
look? I
anybody,
just.
anybody now who needs the Samaritans, this is the
Look, Luke, all you have to do, just invest in the
If you want
most.
to get rich, go to war.
If you want to get rich, just invest in the most fundamentally disconnected, ridiculous tech stocks in America, like Palantir or Tesla, or, you know, whichever one you want. and they'll just go up for no reason whatsoever. For no,
I mean, that seems to have worked to date, right?
Yeah, until it doesn't. And this is the funny thing: when this carry trade in Japan, when all the capital comes back to Japan, they start selling the US Treasuries, which is starting to happen now. They're gonna like the stock market is gonna have to crash, or the entire financial system is gonna be in big trouble. So yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, all the institutions are selling, 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 and all of retail is buying at record pace. And yet, you know, most.
But explain to people what this Japanese carry said, because the Japanese basically were almost doing a bit of a carry trade themselves by borrowing the money in Japanese yen, investing it in US, and getting a better yield, if you like. So they were making money on that trade. Whereas now the Japanese yields have started to go up, so they're now starting to look at it and go, "Oh, let's do that because I don't have to have the US dollar risk now, and I can invest in Japan."
Yeah, well,
Is that fair?
it's pretty simple. I mean, well, basically the yields on the 30-year Japanese government bonds are at the highest level in history. I think they're around just over 3.6% at the moment. But no one's willing to buy even maturity, any of the maturities. So these aren't routine market fluctuations. These are kind of rare and kind of severe disruptions, I would say, to proper market functioning. So under a policy of yield curve control, which Japan has had for decades, they want to suppress their own interest rates across the yield curve. So you're targeting a 10-year yield at kind of near zero levels. And this worked for years because we were in a deflationary environment, but now it's not working. This is a huge problem, and it's not a Japan specific issue because Japan's bond market, as you say, it's the second largest sovereign debt market in the world. So Japanese institutions, the banks, the life insurers, the pension funds, they're the major global investors, and historically they've bought large quantities of foreign debt from the US and from Europe, and they use FX, you know, foreign exchange hedges to protect against currency risk. But now we've got this chain reaction where Japanese capital is coming home, because they're selling the US Treasuries and reinvesting in their higher yielding domestic bond market. And that puts a downwards pressure on the US Treasury prices and the upwards pressure on the yields, which is what's stressing out America, because they have to refinance, what, $8 trillion worth of debt this year. And so the cost of hedging the foreign bond positions, because you have no idea what's going to happen with the US dollar, has become really expensive. So FX hedge returns on the US Treasuries are negative for Japanese investors. So there's a further incentive to sell. And that means stress is bleeding into financial centers. And basically, I mean, I read a long article on it recently, but basically, the only way to actually deal with this is to crash the stock market like they did in 2008 or 2020. Because when you crash the stock market, you crush the risk appetite in investors and they go back to bonds and it reduces the yields. And if you don't do that, then countries that are borrowing way more than they should year after year are either going to have to go to a massive war, you know, as Luke suggests, or they're going to have to hugely cut spending. And I just don't think that Western economies are capable of cutting spending to the level that's going to be needed.
Yeah,
Yeah,
again,
that sums it up.
anyone who needs the Samaritan's number, it's,
You're all
yes,
laughing, but
it
yeah.
is.
No, it's not.
I hope everybody bought some physical gold and silver is all I can say, because
Yes.
ultimately, if you have some physical gold and silver, if these fake currencies go to crap, then at least you're going to be able to go down to the local shop with a silver coin and
Are
say,
you? Well, are you
this
going
is
to
a
go?
no,
advert.
I had this discussion last week. You're not.
No, I
You're
think
not.
we
You're not being
will.
allowed. Think about Americans and in the UK. I mean, they when we had the gold standard, you couldn't own gold. You weren't allowed to, and you weren't allowed to sell it
There
either.
was confiscation as well going on as well
Yeah,
for
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's move on to, I mean, I just wanted to quickly talk about President Trump. We can't have a podcast without him, but he confronted the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, with unfounded claims of white genocide in South Africa. I mean, he then showed him a provocative video which, you know, alleged to show the persecution of white farmers, which was obviously met with a lot of discomfort from Ramaphosa. But what was it all? I mean, is he gone back 20 years to this, or has he suddenly just sort of got it in his mind that, I mean, it probably is still happening to a certain extent, but why bring it up?
I think I can speak for everybody here that Trump is, you know, that's pretty much it. Not to the same extent as Biden was, but he's just completely lost his faculties. And because he controls the Supreme Court to more or lesser extent and both houses of Congress, unlike in his first term where he was kind of shackled, now he's completely free to do whatever he wants. And that includes, you know, coming out on Liberation Day with tariff boards that make no sense that you have to row back on, or, you know, or insulting China hand over fist. Or, you know, saying I'm going to have peace in Russia, Ukraine on day one and it just not happening. Or, you know, or most recently this. The way white people are treated in South Africa, white people control a tremendous amount of the wealth, but they also generate a lot of wealth for South Africa. I would say that, you probably wouldn't want to be a white person in South Africa at the moment. But the idea that the genocide is just ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't know. I think he just lost his marbles. It's going to get worse over the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think what you can say, and maybe Luke would agree with me here, is that Donald Trump was actually Elon Musk in that chair as a South African.
I would, yeah, look, I think it's never been more apparent who ends up ruling countries in alleged democracies when it's so obvious and it's literally all out on the table this time around. There's no shadowy corporation. I mean, he's right there next to him. He's there with his son on his shoulders in the Oval Office. He's wearing t-shirt and jeans when, they had a go at Zelensky for wearing a his military fatigues. The contradictions are overwhelming. It's like so painfully obvious that it's a bought presidency. And yeah, but there we go. So yes, I would say that's definitely the case. Almost the same as why there's such high tariffs on China when BYD are able to deliver exceptional electric cars for half the price of the best-selling Tesla Model Y. So yeah, I think if you read between the lines, it's easy to draw some conclusions there.
Yeah, those BYDs are cracking cars, by the way. We have a lot of them here in Egypt, and yeah, not expensive at all. Even the petrol versions of the BYDs are pretty damn good cars, to be honest.
Okay, let's move on to our guest this week. We're joined by Luke Sautain, CEO of Narwhal Media Group. Narwhal is a fast-growing digital agency that uses AI-driven marketing to generate high-quality leads for clients across a range of sectors, from home improvement to healthcare. One of their latest ventures is Spotdiff, an AI-powered price comparison platform designed to make it easier for consumers to find and compare quotes, not just for solar panels, but also for products like hearing aids, air source heat pumps, boilers, and more. It's all about cutting through the noise and helping people make better decisions with transparent, tailored information. Luke, welcome back to the podcast. How's life treating you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How about you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. We've just had our sort of, our intro on putting the world to rights, the usual politics. But I want to sort of get your take on, without getting too political, but we talked about Trump there and how he's shaping the world with some of his crazy sort of decision makings and obviously Labour and their, basically their recent deal with Europe, with the EU. What are your thoughts on the current sort of horizon in terms of, AI products and the whole tech industry?
It's a good question. I mean, there's a side of me that wants to be what I believe realistic about what's actually happening, and it feels like it's a slow unravel towards a much larger global conflict, and it's really hard to see that day to day. But when you look back retrospectively over the last few years at all of the changes that are happening, it does seem like that slow unravel of sides being made and things escalating. I think what, my personal view is we're seeing countries turn it inwards because not just because China are providing cheaper EVs than what, the real owner of the US is currently providing, i.e. for Musk, but ultimately what happens when you cut off that supply chain coming in? And that's what they're forcing that hand upon early, which is, if there was going to be a global conflict with Taiwan, which it seems like there will be at some stage, then how is the US going to be able to generate all of these goods? And the only logical way of doing that is by starting now and them starting to manufacture in their own country and creating their own goods. So I'm not overly optimistic on how things are looking and slowly unraveling. I think the US debt in particular is obviously pretty concerning. So I don't think there's a lot of optimism about IPOs at the moment. There's a few good ones that are coming out. But I don't know if it's going to be short-lived if things do continue to escalate. But there we go. I obviously haven't had enough positive coffee this morning, so.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, since you were last on, there's been obviously quite a few, let's say, advancements in the company. We saw this alluded at the top there, Spotdiff, and it's all about this agentic AI, and it's a phrase that I see surrounding Narwhal. So, can you just kind of explain, first of all, what Spotdiff is, and also what this agentic AI is?
So Spotdiff is a consumer comparison website, the only one which you are able to compare the prices of services and installation and products for those high ticket items that you experience from when you're a homeowner until, when you pass away. And ultimately our aim as a business is to serve consumers in finding them the best deal in all of these categories each year, ideally. from the age of 45 up until, up to 100. And really, we ended up spending probably £1 million building out the comparison technology from scratch, because what people don't understand is that a lot of comparison companies rely on a singular source of technology, which is a company based in Newport, which creates comparison technology, and they lease it out to the big ones, which, we all know. Comparison companies themselves, attract multiples of up to 20, 30, 40 times annual revenue in some instances. So it's really, really a good sector to be in if you're looking to kind of wade through recessions or, economic downturns. One thing that people are always looking for is the ability to save money. So for us, it's how do we take this lead generation sector segment and make it more transparent and better? Companies like MVF and Leads.io do 60, 70 million a year of annual revenue, but they have no brand loyalty. They have no brand. There's no recourse for individuals to go back and use their service. All that happens is they generate a lead. Somebody's interested in solar panels. They blind sell that to five companies. Poor consumer then gets called, hundreds of times by multiple companies, and it's a bad experience all around. What we're trying to do is go, how do we serve the consumer as the customer? Because if we can solve that problem for the consumer, then ultimately, the money follows, the businesses follow, and that's how you disrupt an industry. So agentic AI, we moved into this field because it looks more and more like the way that we use websites right now, the way that we use Google search right now is very quickly going the way of dinosaurs. It's very quickly going the way of yellow pages. We saw this with Alphabet's stock drop, and that's primarily because people are bypassing. Certainly, younger generations are already bypassing Google search for finding answers. They're using ChatGPT, they're using Grok. And we're only going to see that accelerate once Google Home, once Alexa, once Apple's AI is integrated within its home services like Google Home. And you're suddenly going to see older generations then start using conversational AI to converse with. And a lot of search is going to be done that way. It's going to be moving from, searching for something to having a conversation. So agentic AI isn't like one of those decision-making customer service bots that you have when you lost your parcel. You never end up in a loop where you can't go anywhere. And the majority of conversations that our AI is having, I would say 90 to 95% of people do not realize that it is an AI. So that's really important. So for me, it's how do we completely remove call centers and replace them with a conversational intelligence from which can change into any language and remember any prior conversation and have access to data which they can only find using SpotDiff. So in this instance, somebody may search for solar panels and they want to find the best deal. They put in their address, they sign up to SpotDiff. As soon as we have that information, the AI will access all of the backend information from SpotDiff, and that will be the different companies that operate within their region, the ones which have the best reviews, the ones which have the fastest installation times, the ones which are accredited by the big accreditation companies, right? And it will analyze all of that information and go, this is the best match for the consumer. And its aim is to set up one or two or three meetings with separate solar companies, which is in guidance and aligned with MCS and Heis, which are the bodies, to get the consumer the best deal. And it can do that entirely without human intervention. And to give you an idea, and I mentioned earlier, we'll send over some prior recordings that we can add to this so that people can listen to it in action. But it has the ability to, if it speaks to somebody and that person is on the school run, the person says, call me back at 4 o'clock. It can set itself a reminder and call that individual back at 4 o'clock without human intervention. If it says, I can't hear you, I'm hard of hearing, send me a message. Remember all of the prior information and send an SMS message to the user, and it will arrange the meeting and the consultation that way. To be truly agentic, what the short-term aim is to allow it to pivot services. So if they're not eligible for solar panels and we want it to sell a different service, then we, in the near future, will have it change into a different bot. So at the moment, we have multiple different versions for different categories. The ultimate aim is to merge all of these into one personality rather than having to train multiple ones. And then the final step is to have it self-learning. At the moment, it's reinforcement learning. So it does over 2,000 phone calls a day at the moment. So we're on track to over 1 million conversations or recordings that we can use as training data. And that goes a long way, but it's also extremely time consuming. And the way that these models are increasing so quickly, we want to make it so that A, it's our own large language model, we're not utilizing a third party, but B, that it's training itself based on positive reinforcement. So you give it a reward every time it successfully books an appointment or a callback. So that's where we're heading to, and that's where a lot of our energy internally is focused on at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that it can also, you know, like a human that cannot do this, it presumably it can multitask and do multiple sort of conversations at once. And also, I mean, people balk at like the AI in terms of, you know, their only real exposure to it is probably a little chat window where they're talking and they want to do something. It says, what would you like to do? And usually the thing you want to do isn't even in, you know, computer says no on it, doesn't it? It says, sorry, I don't understand that command. So actually, as AI in, you know, increases in intelligence, you know, I was using ChatGPT the other day with my daughter who's doing A levels, and I was having the actual conversation with it and saying, like, can you explain this behavioral, you know, psychology? And it came back and explained it. And then we said, okay, so is that like an, and gave it an analogy, said, yeah, that's a great analogy. And it went, and she was actually learning more for almost like having her own private tutor in ChatGPT than she was in some of the lessons. So it's unbelievable. So presumably you could take that learning model, could you then white label it and sell it to other man, you know, people who want to use it on websites?
So we're already exploring a number of cases for this. You know, there's a huge amount of call centers out there still. And I believe that this could be a way to replace that for a lot of companies. And there's a couple of different routes that we can explore with this, right? So the reason why we ended up building our own is we contacted a company called Genesys to use their agentic AI. And they quoted us £250,000 to set it up. And then about £25,000 a month to run it. And it was at that stage that I turned to our CFO and I said that we're just going to build this ourselves. I don't actually believe they have anything that special. And I believe that we can build something better within a few months with the knowledge that we have internally. And we have, you know, our model outperforms theirs in terms of its performance, and because they built us a demo, so we could run it side by side. And you know, they did this great big keynote speech on YouTube, which was an hour long showcasing it. And you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in AI at the moment. There's a lot of people who are pretending to have created something that's exceptional when actually they're just creating a wrapper. So you know, this is why it's important to build your own LLM, right? So if you're not wanting to be disrupted, the only way to do that is not by training your competitor. And actually, everyone's competitor when they're building on AI are the large language models, unless it's open source, because you're essentially training it to do something that it couldn't do before. You know, we saw this with Builder.io recently went bankrupt. You know, they raised, I think it was 250 million, maybe more, and went bankrupt, which is incredible. And all of the code that was developed on that platform has is now being taken by them. You know, and you know, it's like all of these businesses that were created, all of these models that were created, they're not yours unless you truly own it. So that's the really important thing to remember, is to not get wrapped up in it. But I would say that this is probably the greatest opportunity for businesses to create. It's the equivalent of getting the first bookstore on the internet. You know, it's having that first website. You know, that's the way that AI is going. And our aim is to have the comparison agent, the first comparison agent, which can do all of these monotonous, unsexy, unattractive things in the world. But it's still essential. You know, there's still going to be a need for it because, you know, I truly believe it's maybe 5 to 10 years until people almost entirely stop using Google search. So, you know, and that's this it's going to take down a lot of companies with it because a lot of companies aren't prepared.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, you know, obviously how it works in terms of the user experience and how the agentic AI interacts with the customer, but you've actually been able to provide me with an example. So let's have a listen.
Hi, it's Spot and Diff the Deal Detectives. I can see you are looking for solar panels for your home, if it's okay with you. Let's see if you are eligible for any special deals. How much is your energy bill each month at the moment?
150.
That's a significant monthly energy bill, David. With bills that high, solar panels could definitely help reduce your costs. Our AI has analyzed your details and found several solar companies that could help you. Based on our AI analysis, we've identified several excellent solar providers, including EcoApproach LTD, Green Energy Electrical, Egg, Kraken Energy, and Evergen Solar. They all have strong track records in solar installation. Would you be interested in having a qualified solar engineer visit your property for a free, no-obligation consultation? They can assess your roof space and provide detailed information about potential savings and payment options.
Yes.
Excellent, David. Let me check the available appointment slots for a consultation. This will be a 60-minute visit where the engineer will assess your property and discuss all the options with you. Let me check what times we have available. I can see we have several available slots over the next few days. Would you prefer a morning or afternoon appointment? We have availability starting from Monday, May 26th. What day and time would work best for you?
Morning. Not sure. Morning. Any day.
I understand you'd prefer a morning appointment. Let me suggest a morning slot. How about Tuesday, May 27th at 9 a.m? The engineer can come to your property to assess your solar potential and discuss the options with you. Would that time work for you, David?
Please repeat the time.
I suggested Tuesday, May 27th at 9 a.m. in the morning. This would be a 60-minute consultation at your property. Would this time work for you, David?
Yes.
Perfect. I'll book that appointment for you now, David. I already have your phone number and email. I'll go ahead and schedule the consultation with one of our top-rated providers. Great news, David. I've confirmed your appointment for Tuesday, May 27th at 9 a.m. A qualified solar engineer will visit your property to assess your roof space, calculate potential energy savings, and discuss payment options. You'll receive a confirmation email shortly with all the details. Is there anything else you'd like to know about the consultation?
No, thank you.
Thanks for your time today, David. Your solar consultation is all set for Tuesday at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Luke, so just tell people how sort of the financial situation will work within Narwhal. So, you know, you're going to get a lead, I presume, from somewhere. Where's that lead coming from? And then give us sort of the story of the lead and how that is monetized, if you like, for the company.
So let's break it down as a real comparison, right? So a real example, sorry. So a lead will cost us on average anywhere from £1 to £20. And a lead for us is somebody who signed up to use SpotDiff. So we have that individual. They're interested in solar panels, let's say. Now, for every one of those, the old model would be we would generate this lead and then we'd sell it for, you know, £60. And that would be it. But it's actually that's a very short-sighted model. So now the model is we acquire that user. And how long can we keep that user engaged with our services? You know, how many years? That's the aim now. And how many different categories can we move them from one to another? So we obtain a user for £1 to £20. We then call that user. And if we use a human call center, on average, it costs about £50 to get hold of somebody and turn that somebody into an appointment or a booking because of the amount of people who don't pick up and so on and so forth. And we still use some human operatives because we're comparing the AI against them, you know, that's really important so that we have a benchmark. So using humans, then it's maybe £50, sometimes up to £100, depending on the category, to go, okay, your roof is suitable. You and your wife are available at this time on this date to have a meeting and then book it into someone's calendar. As soon as that's booked into one of our clients' calendars, then we get paid. And that ranges, it depends on what they're bidding. And this is the exciting thing, it's the marketplace. So if one company comes forward, which happens regularly, and says, look, we'll pay you £200 for every booking that you generate in Essex. And then another company goes, well, actually, no, we'll pay £220. So it's a marketplace in that sense that people can bid dependent on how much priority and weight that they want our algorithm to give them. It is important that it isn't just waiting on the amount of money that they're willing to pay. They have to be accredited and they have to offer a deal of sorts to our company so that we have proprietary deals on our website that you won't be able to find if you go direct. So we have some of the largest, if not probably 4 out of the 5 largest solar installers in the country on our platform, and they all offer different deals from which are listed on there. Now, you can see where all of a sudden, if you remove that £50 to £100 expense on generating that lead, you go from 40-50% GP at scale to, on average, I'm looking at the cost now, it's about 18p to 30p to have an AI do that. So all of a sudden, the margins exponentially increase. So you go from 40-50% GP on the
gross profit for anybody who's wondering what GP is.
Yeah, gross profit, all the way up to 90% gross profit. And that's if you just look at from that one instance. So one user, one category, sold once. if that user gets sold twice to different companies, so two or three companies. So if you have a critical volume of businesses within a particular region, we can book that consumer three times because that's what the associations want us to do. So then all of a sudden you're 98% gross profit. And then if you go, okay, if we get that user to come back next year for a heat pump, then the margin, you know, really does get very high. And that's where hopefully we achieve the high gross profit that you see on companies like Rightmove, and you achieve the recurring nature. So maybe people will only use Rightmove once every 5 years when they move house, right? Or when they're looking to buy or sell. We're looking to achieve that every year and still have a higher GP. So that's the objective.
Mm. So you basically would, in the future, you would have value per customer almost in terms of that. You could have a couple of £1,000 for a lifetime value of a customer.
So it depends on how many categories we stop, right? So since we've recently completed a really good fundraising round with attracting a really good investor on board with a lot of experience, we also have the former CEO of Hargreaves Lansdown, who's an advisor to both me and the CFO. So we're breaking into some new and exciting categories, which we'll bring to the table soon. And the aim is to go, okay, you have all of these home services, which are going nowhere. Regardless of what happens in the world, people are going to be pushing for green independence in terms of their home and their ability to generate power. That's not going anywhere. I can guarantee that. Healthcare, another thing I know is going nowhere, is the over 65s category and the importance of them staying independent for longer and staying out of hospitals. So that means stair lifts, mobility scooters, physiotherapy, all manner of different categories, which are really critical.
Hearing aids, specialized glasses, maybe.
Hearing aids and glasses are two really interesting ones, Kev, because if you look at the hearing aid space, it's being completely upended all of a sudden. Because all of a sudden, I don't know if you're aware, but Apple EarPods, are they called EarPods? They are now essentially clinical grade hearing aids overnight. So the companies that were selling £2,000, £4,500 hearing aids like Phonak and Oticon are suddenly looking really irrelevant. And then you have Samsung also pushing to do the same. So now you can buy clinical grade hearing aids without having to go into a hospital and having a hearing test, have them fitted and all of that faff. You can just buy a pair of Apple EarPods and do the hearing test at home. It's like 98% accuracy compared to clinical grade. And you're ready to go. So, hearing aids, maybe not. Hearing devices, perhaps. And then when it comes to glasses, you have Meta and Ray-Ban, right? And we're going to see this explode over the next 2 years, which is another reason why we're going to see this big move away from websites. But you also now have, is it Warby and Parker who have teamed up with Google? So another trendy glasses company have teamed up with another tech company. And then you have Apple, who have also teamed up with a new glasses company as well. Over the next 2 years, you're going to see people having conversations with their glasses. and that's going to be a strange...
I would say alcoholics have been doing that for quite a long time, though, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, this is true. we're smart pint glasses, I feel like that'd be a great British invention. That's where it can happen.
We were talking about this the other day, I think, walking down the high street with Jonathan Swarren. We were talking about that we should create a beer that has vitamins in it. And then you would actually get your vitamin intake while you were drinking beer. But we agreed that you can only have 10% of your daily vitamins per pint, so you have 10
That's
pints.
The problem, the toxicity of it, 30 points down. How can the alcohol know the vitamin K?
Sorry. Anyway, we detract. So tell us a little bit about what you think is going to happen in terms of some of these companies. I mean, you mentioned Hargreaves Lansdown. Are there any other, potentially big companies? I mean, I presume Hargreaves Lansdown has a bank of people who speak to people all the time, probably not very well, actually, to be honest, from experience. Surely your AI is going to actually assist those people in a much better way and actually probably create more leads for Hargreaves Lansdown or whoever that happens to be.
There are a lot of companies from which are slightly afraid to develop something going forward. There are a lot of internal stakeholders within companies from which will be reluctant to adopt conversational AI because it completely upends their role and their existence and what they've been doing for maybe 20, 30, 40 years as a job. So, you know, I see it more as internal friction within organizations. And whenever I speak to the CEOs or the owners of these companies, it's a very different conversation than speaking to the head of sales. Now, I think people need to change their mindset, because we will always employ people to be on the phone if they need to be on the phone. And that will be only for those high ticket conversations. What you want people to avoid doing is having to call 2,000 phone numbers a day to be told to bugger off 70% of the time. Mm-hmm. And for that individual to, you know, only successfully do 2 meetings a day, for example, right? 2 sales conversations a day. That seems like a really poor use of human capital, where these people can be retrained and repositioned into different roles, or potentially doing some of the more complex sales or relationship building. I'd much prefer to pivot all of our internal telesales team, telesales staff and sales staff onto relationship management and account management and training partner companies than have them on the phone calling thousands of phone numbers a day. And I think, you know, a lot of companies will be the same.
But this whole call center thing has only been able to happen because we've had a first world, second world, third world differentiation in the price of labor, no? Ultimately. If you didn't have Indian call centers, wherever else the call centers were very cheap.
South Africa,
Egypt, India. Is another place as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And all you're seeing now is the next generational leap of that, which is moving to AI. You know, there's already solutions where Indian call centers are using really clever technology that does a live translation in real time while they're on the phone. So they can select an Essex accent and change their thick Indian accent to an Essex accent instantly. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you can't notice it. So, you know, you're going to see more innovation like that. But once again, I only have to tell the AI once not to do something and it will never do it again. Now, if you have a team of 100 people with a high staff rotation, which you have in call centers, the amount of relearning, retraining, you know, it's a huge waste of human capital.
So just going back to the point of revenue, if you were to sell a solar system then, or not sell, but you got a lead and an appointment was booked by AI, and let's say you managed to get 3 appointments because then they can compare, which is obviously the point of your website. Roughly how much money are you going to be getting from that compared to what money you expended?
So let's say, worst case, it costs £20 to £30 to obtain the user and validate their information. And then we sell that user to 3 companies and we obtain about £700 back.
Okay, so that's like, wow, as you said, the markup is incredible.
Yeah.
But the difference between what you're trying to do and what has been done in the past is you're trying to maintain that client in spot diff.
Yeah, we're trying to maintain the client and we're also trying to do right on the consumer by not just seeing their data as a commodity that can be bought, sold and shipped and cut and everything else, you know. For us, that data integrity is key. So keeping that user is more important than selling the data short term to make financial gain.
And you're also going to have one hell of a good data bank.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's already, you know, over a million homeowners, which data we have from using the platform. And from that, you know, we're on track to doing well over a million AI phone calls within 12 months. And with that comes lots of training data. It's good.
So we'll enhance it. So my last question is, explain everybody to everybody who spot and diff are.
So we were heading down this route where we were going, you know, we were speaking to Admin Animations about doing a mini series of adverts with these two characters, Spot and Diff, who are deal detectives. We wanted to bring familiarity to people who experienced UK comparison market before, right? You have meerkats. Now, hyenas eat meerkats, which is, you know, one interesting fact. But the idea is that we have this hedgehog and we have a hyena, and they are your deal detectives. You can speak to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and tell them what you need, and they will be able to open a case and find the best deal for you. Now, we went down this route because the whole reason why meerkats was invented was so that they could avoid high cost per lead costs on Google. Because insurance lead gen, you know, it's up to £100 a click for somebody looking for insurance on Google. However, somebody looking for meerkats is pretty low. So it's not very competitive phrase advertising. So you create a brand and you create something that's engaging, then people are more likely to engage with it. And we're seeing that already with the ads that relate to SpotDiff that we put out. People are more engaging from speaking to a character rather than just being hoodwinked. So they know it's AI in most cases, but they don't speak to it like AI. And actually, the people that we call who haven't seen the adverts, they don't know it's AI. So it's interesting that you can capture both ends of this market. You know, the people who are like, I will never speak to AI. And there's been some really interesting interactions where people have said, I don't want to speak to an AI, you know, go away. And then, you know, the AI apologizes and builds rapport and wins the person over. And then they're having a conversation for 5 minutes. Now, it's not great for me because I've got to pay for that data. But in terms of training, it's really useful. So we haven't gone with the advert creation. And it's mainly because we're able to now create our own adverts internally. So for perspective, to create free 30-second adverts with a large animation studio, you're looking at just under £1 million for a minute and a half of content, right? And a bit like Genesis, the Genetic AI solution, where it's, you know, here's a package that you can just have and it's done. We found a way to create consistent characters, create 3D models of them and rig them, and do this for, you know, thousands of pounds rather than hundreds of thousands of pounds. So we're working on that internally. We hope to get some small skits live initially to prove the theory of what TV could do for us. We do have two investment offers on the table from, you know, the two largest TV companies in the UK, you know, exceeding 15 million of TV spend, right? We're not going to execute on that until we prove that TV is able to deliver the results that we're being told it could and should. What we'll do initially is we'll run one or two adverts on demand, on Netflix, on YouTube, and we'll monitor the performance. If the performance is there, then we may well explore it. But one of the key things that our new investor is very passionate about is that we don't rush everything going forward. This individual made it clear that he started his company when he was my age, and look where it is now. And, you know, it's important to solve the solutions. If you solve the problems that people are having, everything else will come. So, you know, one thing that I've been told is that we're being given time, we're given breathing space to execute it correctly and get it right. And, you know, what will come with that will be hugely positive gains for all of the investors to date and going forward.
And on that, in terms of the current valuations of things like moneysupermarket.com and a few of the other comparison sites, you're currently valued at about £75-76 million, I think, in the last round. How much are those companies currently listed at?
So you're looking at instances of, as I mentioned earlier, 20 to 30 times annual revenue. And they, in some cases, have no technology and they have no, you know, artificial intelligence, and they're reliant on search. So, you know, there's going to be a big upheaval coming, and it'll be interesting to see who buckles and breaks first. But I think anybody who's reliant on Google search is going to be facing a big struggle coming forward.
Yeah, well, I guess you know, it's funny, isn't it, because when you Google something now, 9 times out of 10 you just get an AI summary at the top. So you're not going to a website if you're using Google a lot of the time, other than to look for a source. But I guess, you know, when you're talking about agentic AI, I mean, I work with another, a couple of companies trying to develop, not in the same space, but develop their own agentic AIs for, you know, different services. And, you know, when you're looking at a comparison website, I guess the risk is, you know, lack of transparency in rankings, how you create a software model that gives you an objective result. And then particularly where there's a commercial bias, so where you've got companies that may be paying you for, you know, to put them at the top of the list. And you know, obviously, I mean, regulatory, you have to do that. And then there's stuff like, you know, if you want to work with Hargreaves Lansdown and talk about pensions, do you need to be FCA registered? So there's all sorts of like problem, maybe problems aren't the right word, but the business model becomes quite opaque if you don't know, you know, everything behind it, and trying to get that across to the average person.
Right. That's why it's important to get it right, because there's a lot of big shifts from which if you get it wrong, it can cause friction in multiple ways. And you know, we have to get buy-in from everybody, from the consumer to the salespeople to, you know, the marketing people, and try to make it objectively clear that there is no risk of using this, and there's only upside. And the upside should be felt by everybody, you know, from the consumer, who will get called less and get bombarded less, to the businesses, which will be able to run more efficiently and be able to better use those humans that they employ into other categories.
I think it's just about getting people on side with AI, right? Because the basic thing is, when you have a problem or you're looking for a service, 9 times out of 10, you run into like just a kind of useless phone bot, right?
Yeah.
Where what you actually want is you want a human being answering. Now, if you have an AI, which is, as you say, so 9 out of 10 people can't tell the difference between your AI and the human, then that is a game changer in terms of, you know, what you can do. But, you know, for that 1 out of 10 people who can tell the difference, you know, generally, for example, when you're like, when you've got a startup company and, you know, you're looking at like reviews, for example, and should I be using this website and is it useful? The most upset people are the ones who are going to be the most vocal. So how do you, you know, prevent there being problems with that 1 out of 10 people who, you know, just wants to talk to a person or is, to, you know, unhappy with the service? And I guess that's the problem, isn't it? Because 90% of people can be happy and 10% can still kind of drive you off the deep end.
I think that's where, if we can scale without hiring more humans, but keep the humans that we do have to work with that 1% or that 5%, knowing that today is the worst that the model will ever be and that next week
it will be better.
Yeah. So, you know, you have this kind of curve of performance, which at the moment I see no sight of plateauing, because there's always something else that we can layer in, you know, whether or not that's building out our own LLM, introducing more channels, you know, can we make it in the future so that it's sending follow-up emails headlessly? You know, that's something that I really want to explore. So, you know, there's a lot more layers that you can add into it. And if you can create that commercial sales engine whilst, once again, still solving a solution. It's like, you know, rather than deal detective internally, we see it as being a concierge for consumers, like consumer concierge, which is we have the ability to run around and get all of these quotes for you so that you don't have to. I used Checkatrade recently and I put on there a plastering job and nobody got back to me. And I never felt rejected in my life.
I've been trying because I've got a patio that I want repaved, not the old one dug up and repaved. Just trying to get anyone to do that job. You know, the money's waiting. Yeah. It's almost a nightmare. I've got to the point, I'm just going to do it myself over the half term.
Exactly. I don't know how we ended up in a situation where, there's no tradespeople. You know, maybe it's Brexit. Who knows?
Well, I was probably everyone's working in AI and content creation.
The AI is killing them off, isn't it?
The tradespeople are making 100, 150 grand a year minimum.
I mean, they don't want to come to plastering. So, you know, that's... everyone has to DIY it and then watch a YouTube AI video on how to do it and then do it badly and then get somebody to come and do it and fix it.
Inspires me with confidence, but yeah.
But how long before the robot AI can do it?
Well, you know, I think the only safe category, you know, and what I'd be telling my children is, if you want a safe category, then be an engineer in terms of hands-on with tools in places where robotics or robots are going to find it hard to navigate. You know, we've got the advantage in the UK where self-driving cars haven't fully taken over, quite like in some major cities in the US. Unless you're in Milton Keynes, then you're in trouble because that thing's just straight roads. But trying to get fully self-driving cars on a road where I can't drive down without curbing it, it's going to be extremely difficult, I think.
Would you get in a fully automated, like, you know, autonomous car and go up a mountain pass with sheer drops on either side? Would you get in it and trust it?
No, it's not going to happen, right?
No, but you say it's not going to happen, right? I'm on the opposite side because, you know, people say this like 100 years ago, everyone rode a horse. There's millions of horses. There's a whole industry, you know, around like hay and stables and farriers and, you know, the entire world around horses. And then 20 years later, everyone had a car and there weren't any horses anymore.
That's right. And if we went over 20 miles an hour, we might die. That's what I thought.
Yeah, but like, it's kind of mad, isn't it? And now we have this kind of world where we go, autonomous driving is going to take years and years and years. Thousands and thousands and thousands of journeys in the US have already been taken. So, and it's learning.
Like all of the country roads where, you know, cars are going 60. I my Tesla on full self-driving, I think, tries to kill me at least 2 to 3 times a day.
Yeah, you're still alive, so it's fine.
And then you've got the decision. You've got that classic decision that, like, Would you swerve to, take out the older people that are walking, or would you take the mother and the baby? You know what I mean? Like, there's sort
Oh yeah,
of
like the
two-part
trolley
program.
problem. Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind
Just
of
go
funny.
to the
Like,
middle and take one of each.
most of
I mean,
them.
this is one of the problems with AI that we're experiencing, which is if you give it an objective, it will always go to the least path of resistance to achieve its goal, because it wants to achieve it with as little compute as possible. That's not always great.
Well,
If you've got somebody saying to, we had a sales AI which we were trialing, and they were saying, oh look, we don't want poor people in these regions to use to be sent over to us. And then the AI would just agree, and it would just say, okay, I've removed all poor people. Can you define poor people? And it's just like it's going, okay, here's an objective, I'm going to achieve that. And that's not that, that's where it gets a bit scary, I think.
I mean, it's quite fun, because like a lot of what I do, like content creation or SEO optimization for IG Index, for example, and I don't use AI at all for my writing. And it's funny because people think, oh, the AI is going to be everyone, it's going to do everything, it's going to be amazing. But I feel like I'm the last man on earth not using AI, and that's why it ranks at the top of Google, because it's actually got a voice and a bit of individualism. Whereas people that use AI to do everything, AI, no matter what, even if you say have some characteristics, have some personality, it can't create like a specific personality that people want to read yet. I mean, it may do in the future, but not quite
The
now. Can I
problem with
ask
that, though,
ChatGPT to
is
create that? Can I ask ChatGPT to create an article based on Charles Archer and
you can see I've tried to do it, and it's really funny, because like I have a Substack, right, where like I'm restricted, I can just write in my own tone of voice, and it's kind of uncanny valley. Like it sounds a bit like me, but it doesn't quite have the same tone of voice, and it's quite fun watching it. And I just look at it every month, and I think, is this going to be the month that it can do it? That it can do it? That it just sounds exactly like me, and it just can't quite do it.
But the issue is that, and I think you said this earlier, was that if people don't go to the Google search, then how the hell are they going to find whatever it is they're looking for? They're going to be looking on a chat GPT, whatever it happens to be, a large language model to find whatever information they want. So if you're not included in that large language model, or it is biased because they're all biased, whether we like it or not, in some way, shape, or form, then you're either going to be cut out or you're going to be at the top.
But this is where it's interesting, because like I moved to Substack because you send it out directly to the email addresses. So the mountains were coming to Muhammad. And it's exactly the same with your agentic AI or others that are bypassing phone calls and going through like WhatsApp. They're not searching for you, even though you're doing the lead generation, you're coming to them. And that's how you maintain that market share of search. Because it's funny, over the past let's say 20 years since the 2000s, after the dot-com bust, everyone's just relied on Google for everything. And now that's changing really rapidly. So if you don't, unless you can predict exactly how search is going to go, and nobody really can, you have to find a way to seek them out yourself rather than have them come to you. And you have to use artificial intelligence to do it, which is why it's just a complete minefield. And yeah. The first movers, like you said, I mean, Amazon was the first bookstore online, wasn't it? And then obviously it's become AWS, this massive multi-trillion dollar company. We're not going to say that what you guys are doing at Narwhal is going to become the next Amazon, but one of the companies in the space definitely will take that spot.
100%, yeah, and it's our aim to be in this unattractive, unsexy space which hasn't innovated, right? Which is still filled with call centers on both sides, and it's dirty. It's not a nice industry. The data brokering industry, it's not a good industry. It's marred by controversy and harassment and misinformation. And if we can cut through that, that's the opportunity. I don't have an intention to get into insurance or anything else. The intention is to stay firmly focused on the categories that we're aiming to solve, because we know what the size of the market is to obtain from that. We know that there's over 100 million a month in just disrupting the old model, in just the same categories that we're in. So for us, we know that those companies are facing issues right now. One of them has tens of millions of debt, which is up for renewal soon. And they haven't had to renew that for a number of years. And now, if slowly but surely you erode away the ability that those customers, that their customers have on using them, because they can't trust them anymore, because they don't know if their company is going to be here in a year's time, in my opinion, then it should be an open door for us. You know, everything is lining up nicely, where if we can execute on this correctly at the right time, then, you know, we don't need to acquire our largest competitor and do a reverse takeover, because they won't exist. We'll just be able to take their customers.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
So, Luke, if you were to have a crystal ball, and I'm not going to give you 5 years, I'm only going to give you, say, 3 years, where do you see Narwhal in 3 years' time? What sort of expectations would you have?
Well, based on knowing that competition waning and they haven't innovated, I'd like to think that we will surpass all of the big competitors by, you know, third year. And either they won't exist or they'll be shadows of what they once were. And I would like to think that, frustratingly, in some ways, that nobody will use our website at all. And they'll just be having conversations. And, you know, the ultimate convenience for a consumer is if we can give them everything without all of the noise, without all of the vanity, and be that companion for those individuals, I think there's a huge benefit there. We will, at that stage as well, I believe, in the third year, our biggest market will be the over 65s category. And having a healthcare companion, which will help over 65 stay independent at home for longer, and certainly the older side of that category, I think that would be a really good place to be. And that's where I'd like to be in 3 years.
And geographically, where do you think you will be?
UK, US, and some regions in Europe. US is by far the biggest opportunity, because it's even more backwards than it is here in the UK when it comes to lead generation. You know, they don't have GDPR protecting them. It truly is the Wild West. US is a huge opportunity.
Good. Always great to have you back on and give us your insights. It sounds like things are getting very exciting there, Luke. Obviously, Sunday roast, Sunday afternoon. What is the, you know, the perfect Sunday roast in the Sartain household?
So I've got a rotisserie grill out in the garden, Argentinian. So putting some meat on that and slow roasting it on the spit roast, and cooking some vegetables outside, having it outside, and a pint of beer, and I'm happy.
Very good.
Sounds good. When are we invited, Luke?
When we become a unicorn. How about that?
Okay, sounds like a deal.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. The best riser I get on SharePad is at Defence Holdings, up some 300%. The ticker is ALRT. So they announced the appointment of James Norwood as non-executive chairman and Ian Yarwood Lovett as independent non-executive director. And I think one of them was actually was involved with defence roles in Microsoft, Studio Alpha and True Anomaly, obviously adding some creative and technical expertise in AI, but it's another one of those, isn't it? It's a bit of another one. It's that Rang Nang Naj appointment at Cap AI, where we see two or three people installed with a little bit of a back. You know, one of them was a former Royal Naval officer, and it moves the stock 300%. Mila Resources up some 80% after reporting strong initial assay results from the first two holes of the 10-hole maiden drilling campaign at the Yarral Gold Project in Queensland. And pretty good grades there, 17 metres at 5.46 grams per ton of gold, and grades of 47.4 grams as well, while another hole returned 6.44 grams over 2 meters. So do you know anything about that one, Charles, about Mila? I think we've had Neil Hutchinson on in the past on the podcast, but not for a long while. What do you make of Mila?
Well, I think Mila had a joint venture with Liontown to explore for lithium up in Australia. Lithium prices have kind of collapsed and the money's gone, so Liontown kind of decided they didn't want to continue with it anymore. I don't think it was to do anything to do with the prospectivity of a lot of tenure, simply the fact that, you know, lithium is just out of favour and that you can't really spend capital looking for it when you need to preserve your own financial base. So, you know, when lithium comes back, look for that joint venture probably to come back in the future. And with regards to those results, pretty decent results for gold, I feel like initial drilling. I think it's the same as many companies, which is that they need to go deeper, they need to go further, they need to explore more. But that's a good start. That's a fairly good start. And I imagine the negativity from the end of the joint venture is keeping the share price depressed, but it may not last for long if they get decent results. On that top riser, you were saying the Defence Holdings. I mean, it's kind of almost a tried and tested thing on AIM, where, you know, as you said, Rondon Nudge and, you know, him coming and then the share price spiking, then, you know, selling down a bit.
DG Innovate was another one where the free Tesla, ex-Tesla executives jumped on board. It spiked and then it's come down. When, big names come to small cap companies, you tend to get very large leaps. Sometimes it means you're going to get, a massive change. Other times it doesn't work out to anything at all. So you do have to, take it with the risks and the punches, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Now, we also had Mast Energy Developments. We're up some 58% on the week. Finally, good to see them actually moving up, isn't it? There's been sort of sat in the doldrums. I mean, their market cap is for what they've got seems pretty low.
Yeah, that
So,
was one of my picks of the year, if you remember, guys. That's now a bagger, so I will accept it. It's now 100% up, more than 100% up, actually. But I think basically the seller, and there has been a huge proportion of this company being sold over the last period of time, is now looks like he's starting to out, so finished. So basically now, if you're buying it, you're buying into the story that they've got, which was, they've obviously got one project that's already up and running and producing revenue, and another one that will come that they've got the £5 million funding for now. So yeah, and I spoke to Peter during the week there, so he's working on some more stuff. So yeah, I think that's got a positive thing going through, hopefully for the rest of the year. And I can see that started at 0.17. I can see that it can get to a penny over the next over sort of the rest of this year, and even at that wouldn't be more than 4 or 5 million pound market cap, so it's not like it would be a big deal.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, some of the shakers of the week, I think the biggest loser was Totally. It's down 77% on the week. They received multiple offers for the subsidiaries as part of the ongoing strategic review to address upcoming liabilities. And the board had considered these disposals the only viable option to raise funds in the necessary time frame and aim to complete sales before additional funding is needed. However, the directors did caution that expected proceeds are unlikely to cover all future liabilities, potentially resulting in no value for any shareholders or any return. So, not looking good for Totally, down some, say, nearly 80% on the week. So, the other one, I mean, in terms of RNSs of the week, you've got Panthera Resources that they confirmed that the Australian subsidiary IndoGold had formally filed a $1.58 billion arbitration claim against India over the Bukia Gold project, citing breaches of a 1999 bilateral investment treaty. So that one looks pretty interesting if they can win that over. Geo Exploration, this is an interesting one. I think they were formerly Global Petro sorry Glo yeah Global Petroleum GBP. They reported a 23% increase in unrisked mean prospective resources at the PEL-94 license in offshore Namibia, now totaling approximately 4.31 billion barrels. And they've also got some, I think they've got gold plays down in Australia. Do you know much about Geo, Charles?
Is that the Callum Baxter one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I know is that Callum Baxter found Havieron, right, for Greatland Gold. So is this going to, be the next Greatland Gold? Possibly not. Is it a smart idea to have shares in the, in the stock that went up, what, 71x a few years ago? Yeah, you want to. It tends to be that the people that find the big deposits, regardless of mineral, tend to find them again. So someone to back on a personal level,
I've told you
regardless
the
of the
next
company.
Conroy Gold is in Ireland. It's
Oh.
called Conroy. Sorry, the next Greatland Gold is.
Okay.
It's called Conroy Gold.
Very good.
Nobody's going to believe me until it happens. It's one of those things. Nobody believes you until
Well, I don't
it's
know.
going to happen.
Get
It
that
was up.
EU strategic status and then we can talk. I
It's
think, yeah, they've
up
applied
about
for it.
20, 30% at least this week, I think.
Yeah.
What
So
about Greatland Gold's announcement on Friday about ASX listing and how much they're going to raise and stuff like that? Do we think that's going to have, do we think that's going to the moon again, or are they going to do very well?
We're going above 20p. We're saying those Australian pension funds get their hands on these shares. It's going to shoot up, in my opinion. Obviously, take it with a grain of salt. You can never know, but I do think that it's when you do it on a peer comparison basis, it's just very undervalued compared to other miners in Australia. So the value there is going to be very strong. The other thing, something I a few people have noticed actually, I said not just me, but the way Newmont is trying to wants to offload a significant portion of their shareholding. It's being done in a very calculated way to avoid any kind of shenanigans that might depress the share price. But I'm still reading, it's a 570-page document and I'm still reading through it. But yeah,
Good luck.
it
Good luck
looks,
with that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You've got a bit of capital in it. You want to know what you're investing in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when something's 570 pages, there's often something you don't want to read on page 542. So hopefully not with this one.
The other announcement on Friday was Chilbrands. Chilbrands has now settled a court case in the US, has had £1 million guaranteed to be put in, backed by Jonathan Swan. And it should be back on the market sort of first week of June with, I think, a new plan and got rid of those American, I will say it, shysters, and effectively now should have a good run at it, I think. Even, I think, Luke's been speaking with Callum as well, that we interviewed, about doing some stuff to get chill.com on the go because, yeah, chill.com can do good, I think, in the short term, but then it's all about building a community, as we discussed today. So that one should be quite interesting. And there was also some news on Guardian that they've started to drill there on the Garnet part of the Pilot Mountain. So that should be interesting. The final results should be coming out of the other holes that were drilled, and then this could explode it because basically there is no value, if you like, at the minute in Garnet and the other one within Pilot Mountain. So it could massively increase the resource of tungsten, garnet, silver, whatever else is there in terms of Pilot Mountain. So, yeah.
Even more excitingly, so Glencore Resources just got their next tranche of their USDFC grant funding, $500,000. And just as it relates, obviously very good news for Glencore, the share price went up on Friday, but as it relates to Guardian, that kind of those pauses on grant funding have now ceased. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be in the zone for grant funding in the relatively near future.
Yeah, I'll stay my neck out. It'll be here before the end of June. And okay. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but that happens quite often. So, that's not
fun. So I'll take that with a freaking big pinch of salt then.
It's the vast resources got their diamonds from Zimbabwe.
Yeah, if that can get their diamonds.
If you get the diamond, then GMET can get their grant, and Red Rock
that's
can
right.
get their
and Bazant will get it.
And if Tottenham can beat United in the Europa
League. I told you it would happen.
And United want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it as well.
Oh my God.
I went to a second-hand football shirt shop and there's a whole rail of Man United boys' tops. And my son, I went into his bedroom to empty his bin yesterday morning and it was full of Man United shirts. he's done with it. That's it.
I made a joke. It wasn't well received, you know. I was like, just Spurs, does the manager, does Ange have to go out to IKEA over the weekend and buy like a trophy cabinet? Because I haven't won anything in so long, it's rotted away.
That is true, though, to be fair. But I mean, I don't think I've seen a worse final.
Oh, it was
dreadful quality of football, mate. Honestly, I mean, if United had played with the passion that they had, you know, in that last 15 minutes, we would have absolutely smashed it. But no, it was dreadful football, really, really poor.
Well, that depends who was watching it.
No, really, but the quality of both teams.
There was no winner. It was just crap.
Yeah, it was exactly that. And then we had the F1 last week at Emilio Romagna, and then obviously a great win for Verstappen, and then McLaren taking 2 and 3. Yeah, I mean it's a great race. Anything else? Anything else on the sports side of things?
Well, we've got Liverpool collecting the trophy, Premier League trophy this weekend. So did you see the thing online about Liverpool and Crystal Palace playing? Because Crystal Palace also beat Manchester City last weekend in the FA Cup. So there was a play on it. AI had obviously put it together, and Liverpool are playing with a beach ball, and they've all got the rubber bands around their heads running around Anfield. It was very funny because actually, you know, the Palace and Liverpool match is irrelevant. But there's going to be some big games. Forest against Chelsea will decide which one of them will go into the Champions League next year. Aston Villa have got to win and hope other results go their way. Manchester City have got to at least draw, otherwise they could possibly not go through. Who else? I think that's it. It's the four teams, isn't it? Manchester City. Newcastle. Newcastle need to win as well. So between those five, only three of them will qualify for the Champions League, as well as Spurs. Come on, you Spurs! The thing is, if United had gone into the Champions League, what would have happened? You would have earned more money, but it would have been a disaster.
100 million that we'll just spend on something else, right?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the, you know, fucking UK government.
Yeah, well, it does feel that the bloody Manchester United is an inside job to destroy the club financially. You know, it like is. I swear, like any accountant would like scream at some of the deals they signed. But
the Glazers have been raping it from the inside, and at the same time, I saw a thing from Ferdinand saying they'd signed 49 players since Fergie's left, and he rated three of them were any use. That was Fernandez and two others, and the rest of them being doffs. Just spent a lot of money and not got anywhere. We signed Frimpong as well, and looks like Kirkez from Bournemouth's coming as well.
I think Phil's got a headache. Phil's had enough. Like, TV wise, we're going to talk
about TV wise, moving on. Not want to talk Liverpool.
Oh, sorry. We haven't finished on the football yet. And Verts may be coming to Liverpool as well. So, yeah, all good for next season.
Riveting, riveting that. Yeah, TV wise, Mobland's still very much impressive with Tom Hardy. And also, there's a new series on. I don't know if you watch it, ITV, Code of Silence with Rose Ailing Ellis. Sign language, lip reading, very, very good series. So that's another one. But any series or podcasts that anyone wants to talk about this week?
No, not really. I haven't been listening.
Good.
Luke, sign us out. What words of wisdom would you like to share with the audience?
Build a bunker. No.
line it with gold and silver.
Yeah, yeah.
Build a bunker.
yeah, that's it. Build a bunker, get a phone so you can call some mountains and keep your head down. from my perspective, I think that there's loads of noise at the moment. There's loads of noise everywhere, whether it's the government, whether or not it's politics, whether or not it's war. But I think everyone just needs to continue to solve the problems. And if we can, you know, continue to solve the problems, then there's great things coming. So, you know, everyone's scared of AI, but nobody talks about the fact that if you solve AI or true artificial intelligence, you can solve fusion. You solve fusion, you solve unlimited power. You solve unlimited power, there's a lot you can do, which is good. So there's scary times, but it's also exciting times.
Good. Okay, well, thanks for listening. Please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for any further notifications of future episodes. And have a great weekend on. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.